Today is Friday, April 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the coronavirus crisis continues to grip the world and the U.S., where New York continues to see the most cases and the most deaths.
We've lost over 7,000 lives to this crisis.
Experts around the world say the global economy is headed toward a very bad recession. Also ahead, secret talks are underway for a very big musical reunion by a wildly popular boy band. It's all on today's International Edition. As the coronavirus pandemic continues to spread around the world, the U.S. is close to 460,000 confirmed cases. A spike in deaths in Britain and New York and surges of reported new infections in Japan and India's congested cities make it clear that the struggle is far from over. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, at his briefing Thursday, said that while they are beginning to flatten the curve, this is still a very painful time.
We lose 2,753 lives on 9/11. We've lost over 7,000 lives to this crisis. That is so shocking and painful and breathtaking.
In neighboring New Jersey, Governor Phil Murphy said the number of cases in his state also continue to rise.
We have received another 3,748 positive tests, 3,748 positive tests, pushing our statewide total to 51,027.
Murphy said despite what looks like a flattening of the curve, there are no plans to loosen restrictions on social distancing.
This isn't about you or me. It's about all 9 million of us. As we've said before, this is not a time for selfishness. This is a time for selflessness.
Meanwhile, a top U.S. military leader says the Navy aircraft carrier sidelined in the Pacific with more than 400 crew members infected with coronavirus is unlikely to be the only deployed ship affected by the outbreak. And General John Hyten, vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, also said Thursday that one sailor has been hospitalized in intensive care in Guam, where the USS Roosevelt has been docked for more than a week.
We're hoping that sailor recovers. We're praying for him and his family and his shipmates. The Navy put together a good plan, especially given the challenges of putting 2,700 sailors into Guam.
The Navy, meanwhile, says the biggest problem is an inability to test enough people quickly, including those aboard the USS Nimitz, the next aircraft carrier due to deploy. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been moved out of intensive care. A spokesman says Johnson is back in a hospital ward where he'll continue to be closely monitored. He's been in intensive care for 3 days after his symptoms for coronavirus worsened. Johnson tested positive for the virus 2 weeks ago and at first only had mild symptoms. Well, the global pandemic is taking a massive toll on the global economy. In the U.S., a staggering 16.8 million Americans have been thrown into the unemployment lines in just 3 weeks. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
It's the biggest and fastest jobs collapse since record keeping began 70 years ago. 16.8 million Americans filed for unemployment benefits the past 3 weeks. One in 10 workers have now lost their jobs since the crisis began. The numbers may be even worse. Unemployment offices are overwhelmed with claims, and layoffs are expected to continue with businesses shut down and burning through any cash reserves. By month's end, some economists say the unemployment rate could hit a Great Depression era level of 15%. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Well, the U.S. numbers underscore the terrifying speed with which the coronavirus outbreak has brought world economies to a near standstill. The head of the International Monetary Fund said Thursday the pandemic will push the global economy into the deepest recession since the Great Depression. International trade is forecast to fall between 13 and 32% this year and could be a worse drop since the global financial crisis of 2008 and 2009. The World Trade Organization this week said Wednesday the numbers will be ugly. The global economy, they say, could bounce back if countries work together instead of acting alone. Joining us now to talk more about these astounding numbers is Joel Paul, professor of international trade at UC Hastings Law School. What would a drop like this look like?
Well, the volume of world trade represents about 23% of the world's goods and services. So if you take the entire world economy, about 23% is trade in goods. And if you add in trade in services as well, things like financial services, tourism, transportation, airlines, you're probably talking about a little more than a third of the world's economy. And having a drop of as much as 32% in the volume of world trade is going to have an enormous impact on a number of countries, especially the European Union and many of the developing economies that rely on exports. And it'll have a somewhat less of an impact on the United States, but it will still be a significant impact on us. Trade represents about a little more than 20% of our gross domestic product. So it's not good.
How will it impact ordinary people in their life? Will we have more trouble getting things? Will things cost more? Will it just really wear down the economy? What do you see happening?
Great question. I think what we're going to see are sort of bumps in the global supply chain so that a particular factory that relies on getting widgets from Indonesia is not going to get the widgets from Indonesia that they need in a timely fashion. Mm-hmm. Or a factory that is producing cars that's exporting to another country is going to find that the market is going to be down. And so there are going to be potentially layoffs in some industries, and there's going to be shortages for some goods, for some consumers. It may be that the costs of German automobiles or Japanese automobiles will be higher for some Americans. And so you're going to see maybe Americans buying more U.S. automobiles, but then U.S. automobile producers produce some of their cars overseas, and they're going to have trouble getting them. So there's going to be shortages, twists in the supply chain that are going to make it difficult for producers and for consumers, and possibly lead to higher prices. You don't know what they got till it's gone. I think many Americans who have been critical of globalization thought that imports were threatening American jobs. Mm-hmm. Are now going to find that American jobs are also dependent on imports, right, and exports, and that the loss of that market is going to really hurt us.
Is this the worst case scenario projection if this thing isn't brought under control? Or is this likely what will happen, that international trade is forecast to fall up to 32%?
So the World Trade Organization is saying that if we don't coordinate our policies with other countries around the world, and if other countries don't adopt policies of people staying in place, sheltering in place, we're going to see a 32% decline in world trade. If we do adopt those policies, if we do coordinate, which we have not done to date, then they're projecting a decline in trade of 13%. Now, these are not very precise numbers, I have to tell you. I'm skeptical that they can make an accurate prediction because there's too many players, mm-hmm, too many differences in policies. But I think the general point that the World Trade Organization is making is that we need to have international coordination, need to coordinate how medical supplies are being produced and channeled and shared around the world. We need to provide aid to developing economies that may not have the means that we have to fight this pandemic. And unless those measures are undertaken, I think that their worst case projection is possibly going to come true, and it could be worse.
Well, and of course, it's such an unpredictable situation we're in, and we're also dependent on how all governments respond to the pandemic. There are a lot of moving parts here to how this all plays out. It's scary if their predictions are true that it could be worse than the Great Recession of 2008.
I think the central point that the World Trade Organization is making is that we have to address the pandemic as a health crisis first, not as an economic crisis. It's more important to get the pandemic under control than it is for people to go back to work. once we get the pandemic under control, we can then go back to work. If we instead go back to work too soon and the pandemic worsens, this crisis is going to go on and on, and it's going to be...
That's Joel Paul, professor of international trade at UC Hastings Law School. Thanks for being with us. Well, right before the pandemic, Greece was on a course to a promising rebound after a brutal 10-year financial crisis. Businesses and exports were slowly but consistently growing, and tourism was booming. With the coronavirus, however, the biggest money-making industry for one of Europe's weaker economies is now in peril. As Anthi Karasava reports from Athens, tour operators and hoteliers are bracing for their worst season ever.
It was supposed to be a record year, with this tiny sun-kissed nation and its idyllic islands expecting three times as many travelers as its population of 11 million. Now, not even a single tourist with a hat and camera can be seen. Lysandros Tsilidis, the president of the Federation of Hellenic Associations of Travel and Tourist Agencies, portrays a devastated tourist industry. From inexpensive hostels to five-star resorts, he says, no one has been spared. Everyone is at zero. There is just no movement, nothing happening. All trips have been cancelled, all flights have been grounded. It's impossible to predict how and when it could all start up again. For a country for which tourism accounts for 25% of gross domestic product and where one in five jobs is linked to the trade, COVID-19 is exacting huge financial losses. The Greek economy is the European Union's second most reliant on tourism, after Cyprus, which makes it much more vulnerable and adds more hardship to a nation still reeling from a 10-year brutal recession. To offset some of the pain, Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis's government has weighed in, affording billions of euros to businesses while subsidizing employees' salaries to prevent massive layoffs. On the popular island of Rhodes, though, where more than 2 million mainly British, German, and American tourists flock each summer, resort owners are now considering staying shut beyond the mandatory lockdown that ends later this month. Manolis Markopoulos, the head of the island's hotel owners, say resorts may have no other option than to shut down entirely for the season. They say cancellations are running at nearly 100% for May, and operating costs are too high to maintain in a crisis that has no clear end date. Early and rigorous actions taken by the Greek government have helped contain the spread of the coronavirus here. However, for travel to resume and tourism to kick off again, all countries must be free of the coronavirus, Tsilidi says. Quarantine and travel don't work. Quarantines and travel just don't mix, he says. Which British national or German or American is going to travel halfway around the globe for a week's vacation in Greece, knowing he'll be quarantined for at least 14 days, he asks. To head off a complete collapse of the country's multi-billion dollar industry, officials say they will target domestic tourism more than ever, encouraging Greeks to rediscover their homeland once the virus is brought under control and travel regulations ease. Tsilidis says, though, it may take as much as 18 months for foreign travelers to set foot here again in organized forms of travel. Normality, he says, can only resume when people feel it's safe to travel again. That, he says, can only come from health experts and the World Health Organization when they announce a cure or vaccine for the coronavirus. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
Here are some of the other top stories we are following. The number of Americans getting on airplanes has plunged to the lowest level in more than 60 years. One analyst estimates that air travel demand won't return to pre-outbreak levels until the middle of next year under the best of circumstances. And it's likely to be even later. At the holiest time of year for Christians, churches are wrestling with how to hold services amid the coronavirus outbreak and, in some cases, it has set up showdowns with local governments that have restrictions forbidding large gatherings. Former Vice President Joe Biden has unveiled plans to expand eligibility for Medicare and forgive college debt. The former vice president has begun courting progressives who lost their standard bearer, Bernie Sanders this week, who dropped out of the race. Biden's swift move to shore up his support underscores the difficult choice many progressives were left with following Sanders' withdrawal. Side with the more centrist Biden or keep up the fight and potentially lose the White House again. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. Malawi's Electoral Commission says it's pushing ahead with voter registration for July's presidential election rerun, despite a government-ordered suspension because of coronavirus. Malawi has so far confirmed 8 cases of the virus and 1 death. Health officials worry people grouped for registration and voting could easily spread the virus, but the MEC says only it has the authority to halt the election process. Lamek Messina reports.
Malawi's Electoral Commission says it is pushing ahead with voter registration for July's presidential election rerun despite a government-ordered suspension because of coronavirus. Malawi has so far confirmed 8 cases of the virus and 1 death. Health officials worry people grouped for registration and voting could easily spread the virus, but the MEC says it has only the authority to halt the election process. Lamek Masina reports from Blanta. Malawi's Election Commission says there is no plan to stop voter registration over coronavirus concerns. MEC spokesman Sangwani Mafulilwa on Wednesday said there were adequate measures in place to prevent infections in registration centers.
For example, those that are coming for registration, they are observing the social distance. Fortunately, this time around, our biometric voter registration system is efficient so that we are not having queues in voting registration centers.
Mafulilwa said all MEC staff wear protective equipment such as face masks, and that hand sanitizers, soap, and water are provided for the public. The MEC last week launched voter registration for a July rerun of last year's presidential election. Health officials criticized going ahead with the election process at a time when they are trying to check the spread of coronavirus. Health Minister Japi Muhango says up to 50,000 Malawians could die from the disease if not enough action is taken to stop the virus. Muhango, who also chairs a cabinet-level committee on coronavirus, on Tuesday announced voter registration would be suspended.
What we are saying is you can only have an election where people are enjoying good health. We are a government, and as a government, we have got a duty to protect our citizens. Assuming tomorrow we're attacked by foreign forces, would you go to register? We are already in a war situation. We are fighting the virus. This is war. You cannot subject your citizens to hazardous situations just because you want an election. For what?
However, the MEC argues only it or the courts can halt the election. Opposition parties, whose court case saw last year's election results overturned in February, have been pushing for the election to go ahead despite the risk. United Transformation Movement Party President Saulos Chilima made his argument Wednesday during a televised press conference. He said the group that was talking about the suspension of the electoral process was lying. That is because the laws of Malawi do not allow them to suspend the registration process, he argued. That is the responsibility of the Electoral Commission. What I know, said Chilima, is that the exercise is still on, and I urge people to go and register. But health rights groups say allowing voters to gather for registration and polling contradicts key coronavirus prevention measures. Executive Director for Malawi Health Equity Network, George Jobe, says the public is getting mixed messaging from authorities.
There have been messages on social distance to be observed and also gathering. Then at the same time, we saw there was the registration. isn't that breaking the rules given out? So the two activities are contradicting and confusing to the general public.
Malawi's Constitutional Court nullified last year's presidential election, citing massive irregularities in the re-election of President Peter Mutharika. The court ordered a fresh polls by July 3. If allowed to continue, voter registration would continue until July 7. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet warns the coronavirus pandemic is likely to widen existing inequalities around the world if left unchecked, with the poor, the disabled, the homeless, minorities, women and elderly, among others, most at risk. At a virtual meeting, the human rights chief also had stern criticism for governments that she says are using health emergency measures to justify repression and expand their powers. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet says civil and political rights are being threatened by governments that are abusing the emergency measures they are taking to respond to this public health crisis. She says an emergency situation is not a blank check to disregard human rights obligations.
I'm profoundly concerned by certain countries' adoption of emergency powers that are unlimited and not subject to review. In a few cases, the epidemic is being used to justify repressive changes to regular legislation, which will remain in force long after the emergency is over. I'm also concerned by steps taken to impose restrictions on media freedom and freedom of expression.
Bachelet says journalists, health workers, state officials, and ordinary people are being penalized for criticizing governments for doing a poor job in fighting the coronavirus. She says criticism is not a crime. She urges governments to increase access to accurate information, noting transparency can be life-saving in a health crisis. The High Commissioner says she is very concerned about the rise in hate speech, discrimination, and attacks against people blamed for the disease.
When an existential threat faces all of us, there is no place for nationalism or scapegoating, including of migrants and minority communities. There have been growing and unacceptable physical and verbal attacks on people of East Asia origin and members of other minorities, and action should be taken to combat this.
Bachelet says lockdowns cannot continue forever, and governments must be prepared with exit strategies that ensure societies and people recover in ways that safeguard both their economic and human rights. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights warns the pandemic is worsening inequality in the world, hitting women, the poor, the disabled, and others who are already vulnerable especially hard. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA's International Edition continues. A new report indicates ships are ignoring voluntary speed zones designed to protect a highly endangered whale species. The group Oceana says the results of its analysis highlight the need for mandatory speed limits and enforcement to protect highly endangered North Atlantic right whales, of which only about 400 remain. Joining us to talk more about it is Oceana Fisheries Campaign Manager Gib Brogan. Thank you so much for being with us. And before we get to the details about this new report. Is it safe to say that the pandemic has at least created a better chance for some endangered marine mammals with less activity out on the waters?
We've seen this in the last few years, nothing on the scale of this, but we've seen times when, for example, diesel fuel got very expensive. The destructive fishing gears, they couldn't afford to go out. And so the boats stayed tied up to the shore, and we noticed that the fish stocks came back just a little bit. And so we're thinking that as shipping is slowing down and they're not fishing quite as hard, this may have a real benefit for the whales. A silver lining, I guess.
You do have a new report about speedboats. What can you tell us about the report?
North Atlantic right whales are an endangered species of whale. There are about 400 of them left in the world. And as they swim from their calving grounds in Florida up to their summer grounds, either in New England or eastern Canada, they go right across shipping lanes, going in and out of the ports of the U.S. East Coast and eastern Canada and the St. Lawrence River. And they've found that the ships, as they go through these migration corridors for right whales, will very often strike the whales and cause serious injury, but most likely death of the right whales. So as we're trying to conserve this endangered species, we want to reduce the risk of shipping. And for the last 20 years or so, the U.S. government has put speed restrictions on the ships. There are some areas where there are mandatory restrictions and some areas where there are voluntary speed limits. The science says that if the ships slow down to less than 10 knots, which is about 11 miles an hour, that we see an 86% reduction in the risk to the whales. And so it's an important thing for these ships to slow down. But what we had noticed and the concern was wherever there are regulations that are voluntary, then it becomes a question of, are the boats volunteering to comply with this? Or are they continuing on as usual, even when there are places that have high concentrations of these whales? So Oceana had, over the last few years, worked with partners at Google and an organization called SkyTruth that does satellite monitoring. And we had built a tool to look at vessels at sea, to see how they're behaving. This was originally focused on fishing boats, but we asked the question of, can we see what these ships are doing in these speed areas and get a handle on how many of them are complying with the speed limits and how many of them aren't. And so this report is the first glimpse, the first run of that analytical tool to see how many of these ships are abiding by both the voluntary and the mandatory speed restriction.
What have you concluded?
What we found in our first run, it was over about a six-week period earlier this year, that 41% of the boats were not respecting the 10-knot voluntary speed limit in an area south of Nantucket in Massachusetts. So about 20 miles south of Nantucket in Massachusetts, there has been an aggregation of right whales. At times, there have been 60 whales in this area that the scientists believe are feeding in this area, and they eat little creatures called copepods. And so with 15%, that the 60 whales works out to about 15% of the remaining North Atlantic right whales. But we found that 41% of the boats are not complying with the voluntary speed restriction. So 4 out of 10 boats are continuing to speed along and put an outsized risk to these whales that are in there trying to feed and fatten up for to go along and do their whale things, whether it's migrating to Florida to have babies or to get together and make the next generation of babies.
That was Oceana Fisheries Campaign Manager Gib Brogan. There are secret talks underway about a possible One Direction reunion project. Lead vocalist Liam Payne confirming that due to social distancing, he and fellow bandmates have been reconnecting and talking about the project to coincide with the group's 10th anniversary in July. The news has hashtag One Direction 2020 trending. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our producer, Jackson Bungagne. I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Please take care and be well.
This is VOA News via remote.